are joining Children of the Watch. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me for this episode is Jonah Marie. Jonah Marie, what's up?
Hey, and what an episode to be talking about today.
I know. I'm so excited that you're here with us for this chapter two breakdown of the Book of Boba Fett. So in case you did not listen all the way through our chapter one breakdown, Mac could not be on this episode, so our good friend Jonah Marie has stepped up to the plate, and she will be filling in for Mac, and I can't wait to talk about this. Let's just kind of get into what our general thoughts, feelings were for the episode. Jonah Marie, let's start with you. What did you think about this episode?
I'm just a huge fan of how they're just peeling back all these layers when it comes to Boba and just giving us a deeper look into this character. And it's just been a fascinating ride so far. And I can only imagine what comes next.
Oh, no. I was blown away by this episode. Like, I watched it really early because I had to go to work before, watching it and stuff, taking notes. So I got up really early to watch it, as is tradition now with Star Wars television. And I was just totally sucked into the story. Like, I didn't look at my phone once. I was just zoned all the way in that first watch. And I enjoyed this so much. Part of me was like, man, I kind of wish that this was part of the first episode in a way for, you know, people who might have been feeling a little bit uneasy about the last episode. If they stuck around for this one, I think, man, it just drew me in. I hope everybody really enjoyed this one because this one was such a blast.
Yeah. I kind of wish that they had put the two episodes together and had it like a movie.
Yes.
That would have been more captivating for some.
Especially because, you know, the first episode, I guess when you look at it, the first episode really is like a prologue to the Book of Boba Fett. You know, if we're sticking with that book terminology and stuff, it really is like a prologue. And this was like, wow, this is incredible, this episode. I was engaged with all the present day timeline stuff. The flashback was just intense. I mean, you got a train heist. It's just everything that I love about Star Wars was kind of like in this episode. And it was just so much fun. And there's so many Easter eggs from this episode to talk about. Like, there are so many.
When I saw 52 minutes, I thought, oh my gosh, finally.
Yeah. I loved how long it was. And oh my gosh, there's going to be so much to talk about. Before we do that, let's do a quick rundown of all the business. You can follow us on Twitter at COT Watch or Instagram at COT Watch and engage with us there. We're very active during in-season stuff, and it's a lot of fun to have those discussions with people. But then you can also join our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. For just $2 a month, you get access to our bonus Discord where you can chat with all the people who listen to the show, and it's a lot of fun over there. But we also have our bonus voicemail hotline episodes. Our last one was a lot of fun. I can't even describe the weirdness that took place on that bonus voicemail hotline episode, but you got to check it out if you can. And then you can subscribe to us also on YouTube. I think that does it for the business. I am just ready to jump in. How about you, Jonah Marie?
I am super ready.
Okay, so chapter two is titled The Tribes of Tatooine. The writer is Jon Favreau, and the director is Steph Green. And she is known for, because she was nominated for an Academy Award in 2009 for her short film New Boy. She's directed episode of The Watchmen, which is just an incredible series on HBO, Luke Cage, The Americans, all sorts of things. And she has a lot of experience. And Jonah, I think it really showed in this episode. She just did a fantastic job.
Yeah, the quality was definitely there. And I'm not saying it wasn't there before.
Yeah.
But it just took it to another level, I think.
Yeah. She just blew it out of the park. Like, I hope she directs more Star Wars stuff, because she just, like, she got the pacing down almost perfectly to me.
I agree completely.
Her pacing was awesome. So, okay, let's do this. Let's jump in. So we start off with a sweeping aerial view of Boba's palace. And down below, you can see two tiny specks walking towards the palace doors. Fennec and the captured parkour assassin. The massive gate opens just like Return of the Jedi. That was a fun little callback of thinking back to Return of the Jedi. I love that scene. And then Fennec leads the assassin in. And so we cut to the throne room where Boba questions the kneeling assassin as the two Gamorrean guards stand watch behind. Now, Jonah, I don't know about you, but I'm really hoping at some point we get names for these two Gamorrean guards.
I really hope so. I haven't named them myself. I have a habit of naming characters that don't have names, and I haven't come up with any. But the moment I do, I'll definitely share it with you guys. Yeah, they should definitely have names.
I think so, too. Let's call them Alex and Mac. No, I'm just kidding. So Boba wants to know who the assassin is working for. And the assassin refuses to speak. And Boba says, then if he won't speak, he really doesn't need his head. And so he motions for the guard. And the Gamorrean steps forward and places the curved blade on the assassin's throat. And at this point, the assassin actually, that kind of like gets a reaction out of the assassin, and he curses at Boba in Huttese, and he says, Ichuta, which is, we hear that in Star Wars a lot. We've heard it in the movies, video games, TV shows. In a family-friendly kind of way, what does this mean? Because we are a family-friendly show. What does Ichuta mean?
I want to say it's like an F you.
Yes. Yeah. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. What it boils down to.
Yeah. It's not a nice thing to say. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's basically saying like F you or screw you or something along those lines. And they can get away with it because it's in a fake language.
Of course.
You know, that's the advantage Star Wars has sometimes, is like, you just got to make up a word and it's a different language. And,
yeah.
You know, like Dank Ferrick, you know, that works too. So the assassin says Ichuta, and Boba smiles at him. And I love this because, like, I know there's been some complaints about Boba having his helmet off too much, but you don't get these type of reactions with the helmet on. And I also like the fact that he's taking his helmet off because it distinguishes him. He's not the same person as Din. You know, like, Din's going to try to keep his helmet on as much as possible because that's part of his belief system. That's not a part of Boba Fett's belief system.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's very different from Boba Fett in the comics, because in the comics, you can get away with having him under the helmet the entire time because it's just word bubbles. He's not having to give away emotion.
Right.
Whereas here in live action, the facial expressions are necessary.
Right.
And The Mandalorian did a fantastic job not having that present. But I think it's important to distinguish Boba Fett as someone completely different from Din, in that they don't share the same beliefs or follow the same creed.
Right. And I think they're doing a really good job of kind of establishing that in these first two episodes. Because, I mean, if we're being honest, we're really starting to get to know who Boba Fett is through this show. Like, we got to know him in the Clone Wars, but we really don't know adult Boba Fett that well because he's not on screen a lot as an adult, you know? And so, like, it's nice to get to know him for who he actually is, not who we built him up in our mind to be.
Exactly.
So it's really cool. So Boba smiles down at him, and he says that he's spared his life, so he curses him instead. And so he asks 8D8 what they know of this assassin, and 8D8 explains he is of the Order of the Night Wind. Assassin for hire, Boba says. Very expensive, 8D8 confirms. But Fennec is not impressed, and I love that.
I love how she rolled her eyes.
Yep. And she's so good at that type of character. Like, I was a big Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. Like, I love that show. And, like, I need more Ming-Na Wen in Star Wars. Like, I need her in, like, The Mandalorian next. I need her in all the things, because she's really good at that type of stuff, like the way she rolls her eyes at Boba, or at the 8D8 droid, when, you know, saying, because it seems like 8D8 is like kind of obsessed and loves these assassins almost in a way, right? And that's what I think really annoys her, is like, because she's the master assassin.
Right. And she's also just very knowledgeable. It just tells you that she is very aware of what's out there, what exists out there. And she just, when she says, you know, you're just paying for the name.
Right.
It just says a lot about her character.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what she says. You're just paying for the name. And 88 says that this group is legendary in that there is no way they'll talk. Now, I think it is important that we should pause and say that this is the first time, like, we are actually hearing about this group in Star Wars. So this isn't something that's well known to super hardcore Star Wars fans. If you're just kind of a general Star Wars fan, we're all on the same page here. This is the first time we're all kind of hearing about these people. But in the Star Wars universe, apparently they're pretty legendary for their assassin skills. And I love this line from Fennec. She says, they're just people in hoods. And 8D8 reiterates that they fear no man and he won't talk. And Fennec says, fine. And she sighs, perhaps he fears the Rancor. And then she leans down and triggers the trapdoor, and the prisoner falls down below as the throne moves forward towards the gates. And they watch as the Rancor gate begins to creak open. And man, that does the trick.
It really does.
I love this scene. For a second, Jonah, did you think that a Rancor might come out?
I really did, because I thought, oh my gosh, maybe this is that Moochie connection from the Bad Batch. I thought this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it didn't. But it was still great to see the fear in this guy's eyes. Like, he is aware of the menagerie that Jabba the Hutt used to have.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I thought, too. I thought Moochie from the Bad Batch would be coming out. And I was like, this is going to be a tiny Rancor. But then I remembered the Bad Batch takes place like 25 years before this does. So Moochie should be full grown adult at this point, if Moochie's still out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is really cool to, like, man, people fear Rancors. Even these legendary assassins are afraid of Rancors. And that really goes to, like, Luke Skywalker's credit. Like, when he faces down the Rancor and slays it, that makes, like, his story even more legendary, because, like, even these assassins are terrified of a Rancor. And so the assassin panics and yells that the mayor sent him. But there is no Rancor. It's only a harmless mouse that kind of peeks out. And I thought, you know, that was cool, because, like, it's just a mouse. You know, it's not like a Star Wars mouse. It's just a mouse.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of like that.
And then it does make me curious whether Boba, if there were creatures still there under Bib Fortuna, whether Boba let them go, because it was in a form of slavery.
Right.
And so I just thought, man, that would be so interesting if we got a short story somewhere where we see him setting those creatures free, because, you know, they shouldn't be gladiators under his name.
Right. And I'm glad you hit on that point too, because I think it goes back to something in chapter one when Boba looked at the Rodian in the flashback and he said something about setting free his bondage, like setting him free from bondage. And Mac and I kind of discussed in that breakdown, like, what if that's what he's actually come to do? And like through the guise of I'm a crime lord on Tatooine, that's the only way I can actually get this done is to set people free from their bondage is through the system that's already there.
Yeah, I can totally see that being the reason why he's wanting to approach this as a crime lord rather than enslaving people and you know, shipping spice here and there. He's wanting to break some of that down, alter it, and shape it to what he thinks should be the kind of system they should have.
Right. Like, maybe it's a little morally gray, but we're not going to be doing all the bad things that Jabba was doing, and we're going to make sure, you know, we're going to do it my way instead. So, it is pretty interesting.
It reminds me of a character from the Lost Stars novel, Sienna, who, you know, has certain beliefs and decided to stay with the Empire to see if she could try to change it from the inside.
Yeah.
She wanted to, you know, still believe that there was some good that can be done. And so, yeah, you can see Boba's actions being somewhat similar.
Yes. Yeah, and we'll talk about that too, especially when we get to that train sequence and stuff, because I've got an idea of what might actually be Boba's motivation. Because if there was one critique that I had from the last chapter, is in the present day, I did not understand why Boba was doing the things he was doing. Like, I didn't want it to be just surface layer, but now I'm starting to think that there is a very deep thing that he's trying to do here, and we'll get to that when we talk about that train sequence, which was just incredible.
It's so good.
Back to this part, the assassin's yelling, he's freaking out, no rancor, just a harmless mouse. Fennec seems pretty happy that the assassin cracked so easily. And then she looks at Boba and says, shall we visit the mayor? And so we cut to black, and then we get the title sequence, The Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine. Now, Jonah, I think this title works on several different layers. On one layer, it's talking about kind of the tribes of the Tuskens, right? But it's also, in my opinion, kind of talking about the different factions that you have on Tatooine, like the Mayor and Garza Fwip and the Pike Syndicate that we'll get to later. You just got all these different factions vying for control on Tatooine.
Yeah, yeah, I agree for sure. I definitely think it's working on that level as well. And I know even though it says the tribes of Tatooine, I was also thinking about tribes personally. Like he had his own tribe in a way with his father. And he ended up losing that. Mm. And then he ended up being with a crew of bounty hunters. And that was his tribe for a short time. And so now he's at this point in time where he's found a different tribe to be part of. And it's just so fascinating to see the stages of his life and the different kinds of tribes that he's found himself in throughout that timeline.
That's really good. Because, like, especially by the end of this episode, he has been accepted by a new group, you know? And so, like, I think you're spot on with that. So after we come out of the chapter 2, The Tribes of Tatooine, we get another awesome aerial shot of all the ziggurats of Mos Espa as we fly towards the crater section of the city. And in a street below, Boba and Fennec march through the city with the tethered assassin. And some Trandoshans watch as they proceed towards the stately mayor's office. And I really like these Trandoshans. They are designed more like Bosk than what we saw in The Mandalorian. And they've done a really good job of like bringing them to life in this show.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely seem more developed, I think, and less, I remember just thinking dinosaur when I was young and watching Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, very Doctor Who-ish sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, know? They're more organic, it feels like. Yeah,
it kind of feels a little more real than it normally does. And so as they walk up to the mayor's office, does it remind you, it does me, it kind of reminds me of Doc Ondar's in Galaxy's Edge down in Disney World and Disneyland, just like the huge block lettering on the sides of the office really reminded me kind of Doc Ondar's. Now, I'm not saying that there's a connection between the mayor and Doc Ondar. It's just visually, there's something there that kind of sparked my memory.
Yeah, it definitely has to stand out as like a place of office, of holding office and whatnot. And it really just brought me back to, you know, jury duty days. Just waiting and sitting, you know, there's a clerk and whatnot.
When they enter, there's that civil servant's desk and you got this guy just trying to do his job. Right? He's got his hat on, he's got his nice mustache, he's got his long hair. This guy's not trying to get involved in any sort of power play between people on Tatooine. He is literally just the secretary for the mayor. He doesn't want to cause any trouble. Boba Fett announces himself, and then the servant looks down at his computer to see if there's any Boba Fett scheduled. I thought that was like really funny. Like, oh, let me see here. Boba Fett. And he's even kind of mumbling that to himself. Yeah.
Like, let's check the F section of the list and see what time is your appointment. It just, it felt like, you know, being at one of those places where it's like, you want to just bash your head against a desk.
Oh, man. And it's so funny because, like, this guy clearly has no idea who Boba Fett is, even though, like, he's walked right in. He's holding a rifle in his hand. Doesn't seem alarmed by that at all. It's just like another day on Tatooine, I guess. So the servant says he doesn't see his name, but he's not allowed to finish because the major domo of the mayor steps in. And this guy who plays does such a great job. Like, he is so annoying, but like, he, in a good way, like, I really enjoy watching him perform this part because you can tell, like, he gets under Boba's skin.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I really love the online reaction and how he would be the kind of person who would ask, you know, may I see your manager?
Yes.
Like he gives off that kind of energy.
He definitely does. He definitely does. And once again, there's a sarcastic attitude exuding from the majordomo, and he tries to explain that the mayor is indisposed for the rest of the week, but Boba gets annoyed and begins marching around the counter to head into the mayor's office. And they breeze past the majordomo and enters despite his objections. And they enter, and sitting in the middle of the room is my guy, the Athorian mayor, Mock Shiaz. And I love Athorians. Like, I just love, they're one of my favorite species in Star Wars. I love the way they sound. They comfort me. If I could take a nap with an Athorian telling me a story, I would.
I can just visualize that in my head.
Yeah. I just love Athorian.
At all. He was just sitting there.
Yeah, he's just, you know, yeah. Oh yeah, the majordomo was totally lying, right? Which he's a good majordomo, you know? Like, that's his job, is to keep people away from him, and he was trying to, at least. So the mayor asks, who is this who enters unannounced? Boba knows he knows who he is, though. And then the majordomo says, is the new Daimyo, Boba Fett, your excellence? And the majordomo is still playing the game, right? He's still playing the politics. But you can tell Boba is starting to get frustrated with the side of this. Like, I don't know if he has the patience for the politics, like going through the motions like the majordomo and the mayor are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something probably he's going to have to learn if he's going to hold this position for a while.
Yeah.
So Boba angrily throws the assassin down and asking why they sent him to assassinate him. The mayor acknowledges that he is a member of the Order of the Night Wind, and Boba thinks he is admitting to it. But the mayor signals to one of his guards, and in an instant, the assassin is shot and killed. And that was like the first time in the episode where I like audibly gasped. I was like, oh, whoa. Like, I wasn't ready for that.
Neither was I. And I thought, oh, well, there goes my theory. I was really hoping they'd unveil him and then yeah. have this conversation. But no, that none of that happened. But it's okay, because I think some of the things that they unveiled about the Order of the Night and how they're not allowed to operate outside of Hutt space gives you the idea that, okay, well, they were definitely sent from Hutt space.
Exactly. So, okay, that's what I was about to get to you. So when everyone raises their weapons, they say, the mayor says, the Order of the Nightwind are not allowed to operate outside of Hutt space. Thank you for turning him in. Give this man his reward. So there's two things here to me. One is that it indicates Tatooine is no longer considered part of Hutt space, right?
Yeah, that's my impression for sure.
Okay. And then the mayor is suggesting back to Boba, stick to bounty hunting by giving him a reward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting for sure. And yeah. I think Boba letting go of his bounty hunting past is interesting, because it was such a big part of his life. I mean, that's the life that his father led. And so for him to really, you know, accept this new role that he's placed on himself, it's so fascinating to see.
Yeah. I mean, and I love that though, because like we all go through transitions in our life. And if there's one criticism of Star Wars that I could have back in the past is like, a lot of characters stay static. Like who they are as children is who they are when they die, like as adults and stuff. But I love the fact that kind of in this new era of Star Wars, we're getting like aspects of like, no, they change as they grow.
Yeah. You know, like, it's his 2022 resolution.
That's right. Yeah. He's got goals. He's got aspirations. He doesn't want to just be a bounty hunter anymore.
Exactly.
Good for him. So Boba says, I know you sit on the throne of your former employer. Or I'm sorry, that's the mayor. And then Boba says, Bib Fortuna was not my employer. And the mayor acknowledges that it was Jabba's throne. And Boba agrees and says that it is now his. And so he's taking the payment as the tribute he should have given him before. So Boba's like, okay, I'll take that payment. But it's not a reward. It's the tribute you owe me.
Yeah. And then talk about shade.
I know, like Boba's just tired of it, I think, at this point. Like he is just so over all of this. And he's like, you will respect me. I'm in charge now. And so then Boba gives him an icy warning. You should remember, you serve as long as the Daimyo of Tatooine deem it so. So this is the first time Boba's like, okay, I am in charge. Because I felt like in chapter one, he was kind of like, let's not ruffle any feathers. Let's see who pays us tribute. Now you made Boba mad. Right? Like
you
now
don't put
he's
Boba
like,
in a corner. Okay.
Don't put Boba in a corner. That's a good t-shirt idea.
That would be a great t-shirt.
Don't put Boba in a corner. Now he feels trapped. And so that's not a good thing for you, because you know, like you don't want to make Boba Fett mad. Like the dude's into disintegrations and stuff. So you got to be careful with him. So he turns to exit, but the mayor has some parting words for Boba. He says, before you threaten me, you should ask yourself, who really sent the night wind? And the mayor says that he has no motive to do this, but Boba isn't playing the game anymore. Instead, the mayor replies with the tribute, his advice. He's like, okay, I'll give you a tribute, and it's going to be my advice. He says, running a family is more complicated than bounty hunting. Go to Garsa's Sanctuary. You'll see what I speak of. And so I love this because, like, he even called it family. And we've been talking about this leading up into the show. Like, this is the Sopranos in space or the Godfather or something. So they're just straight up leaning into that.
It also reminds me of, like when you're in a job and they say we're like family, and you know, some employers are like, yeah, right, okay, whatever.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, like that kind of family was such an interesting line that he threw there, because it is essentially very hard to run a family, to keep it held together. Whereas bounty hunting, it's more of I'm myself. I look after myself.
Yep.
The bounty is just for me. And then that's the only thing I got to worry about, myself.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like, you can't really leave family, right? Like if you're in a family, you're in a family, whether you like it or not, that's your family, you know? So, so that's part of it too. So we cut to Boba and Finnick entering the sanctuary once again, and there's a different air to this place this time. It's not as fun as the first chapter. Garza seems more tense, and she says that she can get him a drink while they sort this out, and you can tell Boba's confused, and he asks if there's something he should know since she is sweating like a Gupta on Mustafar, and in case you forgot where Mustafar is, that's where Anakin burned to a crisp in his fight with Obi-Wan Kenobi in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Then she drops the news. The twins have laid claim to their late cousin's bequest. Ooh. So like when that happened, I was like, oh my gosh, we're doing this. Here we go. Now I will say, Jonah, as far as I know, the twins, this is the first time they're also mentioned in Star Wars, right?
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. It didn't ring familiar to me.
No. And I looked up like Jabba's like family lineage. He does have a cousin, but I don't think these are the cousins that are mentioned in this show. So basically the twins are cousins to Jabba the Hutt, which is just incredible. And Boba looks confused. He says the twins are preoccupied with debauchery of Hutta to bother with any ambitions on Tatooine. And in case you're not familiar with Nal Hutta, that's where the Hutts are from. That is like their home planet, right?
Didn't we briefly see it in The Mandalorian? I think, was that? Or was that a different planet? I don't remember now. I feel like the place with all of the graffiti was Nal Hutta.
Was it?
I have no idea. I don't remember.
Listen, I will choose to believe that. Now, I want to say we have seen it in canon, haven't we? Like, we saw it in the Clone Wars, I think.
I believe so.
When it's Darth Maul goes.
A bit foggy in my memory.
I think so. It's basically in the old EU. I can tell you this for sure. In the old EU, it was like a swampy planet. And that's where the Hutts came from. In terms of this new one, in the current canon, I'm going to say it's probably the same type of thing. And I think we've seen it in the Clone Wars when the Shadow Collective and Darth Maul went to basically coerce the Hutts into the Shadow Collective, which we talked about on our lead up into the show. So that's something, if you're like, you want to know more about, go check out the prior podcasts leading into this, because that could be important later. So basically, the twins are coming, and in the distance, you can hear faintly drums beating, and Max Rebo and the band stop playing. I'm going, uh-oh. Everybody in there is going, uh-oh. And I love, like, the tense buildup of this scene. I thought it was really, really well-directed and edited. I thought it was really, really cool. And they turn around and they face the entryway. They head back outside as Boba puts his helmet back on, and the whole street stops as servants carrying an enormous litter enters bearing not one, but two Hutts. We get two Hutts.
Two fraternal twins.
And that's so Star Wars, right? Like the twin motif thing going on.
Yeah, it's really interesting to have the Hutts back.
Yeah.
In the playing field, because not only does Boba have to deal with the mayor, because we're not sure about him and his motives.
Right.
You know, there's the major domo who might be operating on his own. Who knows? We're not sure either.
I don't know if we can trust him.
Yeah, right. There's Garza. Uh-huh. And we still don't know for sure who sent the assassins. It could have been the twins. Right. But there are so many game pieces on the board, and it reminds me of like a game of Djarik. Like, you don't know who's going to strike next.
I love that. Yeah, that's what I really loved about this episode too, is because, like, okay, now you're starting to see bigger pieces of the board, literally bigger pieces of the board, like start to enter into this whole almost kind of Game of Thrones backdoor politicking type situation, vying for control of Tatooine. I love that because we've never really seen that in Star Wars before. Not really.
No. Yeah. So yeah. This is going to be a very interesting game, I guess, for Boba to play, especially since it doesn't really look like he knows how to play it.
Right. Yeah. He's learning on the job. Given
what we saw. Yeah.
Yeah. So these two Hutts are the twins, and it's so good to see Hutts again. I feel like they were missed in the sequel trilogy. It would have been cool to see some Hutts in the sequel trilogy. And then, you know, for a while, I thought maybe we'll get them in The Mandalorian. But, man, it's just so good to see them in live action again. They looked really cool. The male twin had, like, a tattoo under his lower lip. The female one kind of reminded me of Zero a little bit, like her color and stuff. So that was so cool. And in case you're not familiar, Zero the Hutt is a Hutt that we saw in the Clone Wars who was super annoying. just so annoying. But so the slightly smaller of the two Hutts fans herself as they are carried forward, and the servants and the drums stop, and the male Hutt speaks first. He says, "Boba Fett, there is business we need to discuss." And then Boba responds back in Huttese, saying that this is his territory, but the Hutt corrects him. It's Jabba's territory. And then they even have like a holographic contract to prove it. And I don't know why, but like I love that. Like I was just like freaking out in my room at 5 a.m. this morning, like, they even brought a contract to this thing.
It's like Jabba's will.
Yeah, yes. It's Jabba's will. Oh, man. It's so fun. But there was also something about this scene. I don't know how familiar you are, Jonah, with the Tales of the Jedi comics, like the old 90s Kevin J. Anderson stuff. But there was a lot of Hutt stuff in there. There was just something about this whole scene that reminded me of like very early 90s expanded universe of Star Wars. And I was basking in its glory. So Boba doesn't care about the contract at all. Now, did you notice like when the Hutt's laughing, he's wiping his head, but he's wiping his head not with like a handkerchief, but it's like a small white hamster thing.
Yeah, I saw that and I thought, oh my God, that poor thing.
So sad.
Part of me thought, oh my God, that thing is so adorable. But at the same time, I thought, oh my gosh, that poor thing is wiping off the sweat of the Hutt.
If you go back and look, that thing is so terrified. It is like shaking in his hands. And I would be too, because he's probably going to eat it when he's done wiping the sweat off.
I mean, thankfully he does let it go and it ends scurrying away. And I was so happy that happened. But then I noticed that there was another one inside of a bowl. And yeah. I thought, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so good. So the male Hutt says, "Is that so?" And then we get a major shout out to the Star Wars comic series as a black furred Wookiee bounty hunter marches forward. Now, I'm going to try to pronounce this name correctly because I have such trouble with his name. But this Wookiee's name is Black Kersantan. 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 Black Kersantan.
I couldn't even tell you if that was wrong or right.
Black Kersantan. I'm just going to say it quickly. So, here's a little bit of backstory. Like this Wookiee has actually been in Star Wars canon already. Okay, so if you're not familiar, he's in the Star Wars comic series. He's obviously a bounty hunter, but he was forced to leave from Kashyyyk, and he trained as a gladiator. And Boba even mentions that in the episode. He's worked for Jabba several times. He's had a run-in with Obi-Wan Kenobi when Obi-Wan was on Tatooine. He's worked for Darth Vader once, and he's had many run-ins with a character named Dr. Aphra, who's like this really cool Indiana Jones type character, like in Star Wars. And a lot of people have been speculating she might show up at some point in one of these shows. And Black Kersantan, Black Kristanton. Thank you. with him being in it, kind of makes it seem like, okay, maybe we'll see her one day. But I just love that they're leaning into canon like the way that they are.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially with Cobb Vanth right. making that appearance in the previous, in Mandalorian season two. Like, that was a really cool reference.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to see the comics being incorporated into the story, it's just, it makes people happy because it just feels like the universe is actually working together.
Yeah. Like, you shouldn't have to have those things to make whatever story you're reading feel like it has weight. But it's just such a nice added bonus. Like, when you pick up a comic and you see this character and then you see him on screen too, and it's so consistent with what he's already been, it's just, that's a really fun thing to experience because you don't have to read any of the comics or anything with that character in it. I'm gonna call him BK from here on out, with BK in it. But like, if you want to, those stories are there. Like, you can learn more about him if you want to. And I just love that.
Do you think we'll see him and Boba and Fennec facing off?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. I think this guy. Oh, yeah. There's going to be a fight. And I think Boba is going to like physically fight him, which is going to be like a cool scene, I think. I think that's definitely going to happen. You know, and I think we can assume Boba has fought Wookiees before because he used to have like a Wookiee pelt kind of hanging on his armor.
I see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll
see.
I think we'll definitely see BK in action for sure, though.
I do love that nickname.
It's easier to say. So obviously from Boba's reply to the twins, he knows BK. He doesn't care. He orders the twins back to Nal Hutta, and the sister wants to kill Boba, but the brother says that he is more patient. Boba then says, nah, she's got it right. You better kill me if you want to take the throne.
Yeah, that was, I think the line that followed too was also really interesting, where Fennec says, we would have to get permission if you want to kill them.
Yes.
And it's like, permission from whom? What other player do we not know exists right now?
The way I kind of understood it was, is that the other Hutts? Like, you almost have to get permission from the other Hutts?
Maybe. I mean, Leia didn't get permission.
Oh, that's for sure. She did not. Yeah, it's weird. So it, there might be like a higher power of someone in charge that we're not aware of, that they all know who's in charge, but we don't yet.
Maybe with Crimson Dawn in mind, maybe mm-hmm. Kira?
Ooh, that would be awesome. So yeah, right. Kira is from Solo, Han's ex-girlfriend who left him behind at the end of the movie. To go join Darth Maul on Dathomir, and then nobody got the end of that story. It would be really cool to see her in charge of Crimson Dawn.
It'd be fascinating, yeah. I mean, I would love to see her back, and she seems like the kind of person who would love to be back in Star Wars.
Yeah, and like, with all the Game of Thrones kind of allusions I feel like the show is making, why not?
Why so not? True. Yeah, so, but that line was really interesting.
That was an interesting line. Like, why do you have to get permission? It makes me wonder, like, okay, maybe Boba knows he's not going to control the whole underworld. He just wants Tatooine. Which will kind of go into my speculation later when we talk about Boba and the Tuskens. Because I think I'm starting to understand what his motivations may be now. Based on the flashbacks. So, I also got to say, those poor, poor servants are struggling under the twins.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, you can see, like, it looks like their knees are shaking, like, especially in the middle. That's really good acting by those people because, like, you got to imagine those huts are pretty heavy. Like, one hut is heavy. Two huts, that's really heavy.
I remember I was visually imagining Boba on his litter if he was to start using his own, and then yeah, them yeah. on their litter, and it's just like yeah. a litter versus litter.
Litter off.
Litter off, yeah.
Not only like are they marching towards each other on their litters, like they've decorated their litters, like almost like a Christmas parade type situation we got going on. They've got lights and stuff on it. Yeah, that would be incredible. I'm so down for that. So the whisper, the sister whispers something, and then the brother says that they'll deal with this later. And then he says, "Sleep lightly, bounty hunter." And again, like people are not respecting Boba as a crime lord. They still see him as the bounty hunter, and they're trying to like, and oh my gosh, this might be like a revelation. They're trying to put him in like where they think he should be, just like a lot of people I think might be struggling with where they think Boba should be. Oh. And that's not who Boba is saying he is. Like Boba is saying, I'm someone else. And everyone's trying to put him like this square peg in a round hole. And Boba's like, no, that's not who I am anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said, for sure.
Thanks.
oh man, I had the thought just then and I can't believe it ran away from me.
Darn.
No, it's fine. Boba also wanting to rule with respect, and
yes. yeah.
Fennec saying that, you know, fear is a sure bet. Mm. And that's not something that he is willing, at least right now, is willing to use to his advantage. And I'm so curious, to make himself known as a crime lord, if that is what he's wanting to pursue, he's going to have that right. sort of like iron fist and, right. and show that he is in charge. And I don't know whether you can do that in his position with just respect. And you know, it actually reminds me of very briefly something in The Witcher from season one when yeah. the bard says, you know, respect doesn't make history. Ooh. And so I'm so curious what he's going to do, because if he really wants to be recognized as something that's not a bounty hunter,
yeah.
he's going to have to enforce that.
He's going to have to do something big.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I am excited because like he's kind of drawn his line in the sand. And I think there is going to have to come a point where, am I going to cross that line or not? And he's going to have to make that decision. And is it going to really be worth it to him or not, too?
Exactly. I think
it's going to be the important part of that. And so then we get that line, like you said earlier, where Fennec says they're going to have to get permission to kill the Hutts. And that's so interesting. And they know that there'll be a problem for them. Like, the twins are going to be a definite problem. And then we fade into black, and we go back into the upper chamber of Boba's palace and zoom into the Bacta. I got a 1-star review on the podcast for saying Bacta.
That's Bacta. Like saying Han and Han.
I know.
Everyone says it differently.
Like, are you going to give Billy Dee Williams a 1-star review? No, you're not.
Oh, no.
No, you'll pirate. All right, so Boba's palace, zoom into the Bacta pod, where Boba remembers his time with the Tuskens. And then really from here on out, we're just in the flashback the rest of the episode. And I know there were some people who were like kind of let down because they really want to know what's going on with Boba in the present. But I'm telling you, I think everything that's happening in these flashbacks are going to play a major role with what's happening in the present. So I think these are so important.
Yeah. I was, when I saw the transition into the flashback, I was like, yes, this is the part I've been waiting for.
Yes.
Because the Tuskens have been such an interesting aspect of this series.
Yes.
And I just, I was so happy when we finally went there.
Yeah. And that's the thing about this show, is that I think it's really subverted expectations, but in such a good way. Like, I did not expect to find my heartstrings being pulled by Tusken Raiders. Like, I love this tribe of Tuskens, and I wish them nothing but the success, but I am really worried about where we're going with them.
Super worried. Yeah. Because as I was talking about earlier, you know, his dad was his tribe. He lost his dad.
Yeah.
You know, he had his own group of bounty hunters, and we know Cad Bane had a role at some point, and he ended up working by himself, so he lost that tribe, and now he's in this new tribe, and it's like, well, is this a pattern?
oh no Yeah. I'm worried.
Yeah.
So in the flashback, we see Boba is learning how to use a gaffy stick from the warrior who defeated him, and I'm just gonna call her our Tusken queen, our warrior queen. She's amazing.
I love her so
much.
She's
awesome. She's so cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, her whole getup, though, like, man, I'm excited to see the cosplay that happens of these Tuskens, because they're, like, legit. So he's using some sort of training stick. It's not like a full gaffy stick like we see with everyone else. And Boba gets the grip wrong and a quick slap for it. And he insists he's holding it the same, but she knows. But she shows him that he isn't by parrying it and causing his stick to fly into the sand. And he realizes she's right. And then we transition into later in the day, and he begins to get the hang of it as the Tusken children watch them. And then behind them, one of the giant toads emerges from the sand, and a Tusken grabs his cycler rifle and kills it. And the Tusken children go to see the kill when there's suddenly a familiar noise. And I totally thought that this was a crate dragon.
Me
first.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah, I was totally in that train of thought.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but like the noise, I felt like the sound mixing like intentionally led you to that conclusion, because it kind of sounded like when Obi-Wan in A New Hope comes to rescue Luke. Like the one thing Tuskens are just terrified of are crate dragons. And so like Obi-Wan uses that crate dragon scream. That's what that is, that weird noise that he makes when he's going over the rocks. It was kind of like that noise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, I was like, oh, this is the crate dragon that they killed in season 2 of The Mandalorian. I was like, oh, wow, we're seeing it. Nope. Not that's not it. And again, it subverts your expectations, but in a good way. So the warrior urges the kids to get off the dune, and the adults begin arming themselves as whatever is coming gets closer and closer, and they take aim, and in the distance, as something approaches, it's a speeder train, and the train begins firing on them, and the Tuskens fire back, and many Tuskens are killed. Boba rescues some children, and they hide behind a dead Bantha, and we see that on the train, there's the Pikes. Wow.
Yeah. My mind was blown.
Yeah. So they are part of the Pike Syndicate, and we saw one in Solo, and they make several appearances in the Clone Wars. They deal mainly in spice, which is like a drug in Star Wars, very similar to, I guess, spice in Dune, except it doesn't give you like visions of the future, I don't think. it's more like drugs in a bad way.
Yeah.
So like it's the Pike Syndicate is someone we talked about as like one of the syndicates that could show up in this show. And here they are in chapter 2. So it's really cool to see them. And they've kind of been redesigned from their live action debut in Solo, because their heads are a little bit bigger like they are in the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we'll talk about, they don't look exactly like they did in the Clone Wars when we get to that part, but
yeah, and it reminds me of the tribes of Tatooine. Like they're very just these Pikes are different from the Pikes that we saw here,
right?
Because there's a variety.
Yes.
And but the train itself, like it reminded me of the construction of the Transcontinental Railroad in the 1800s in the United States. And how it impacted the way of life of various Native nations by advancing through indigenous communities and herding their hunting grounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time, the U.S. Congress gave away land to railroad companies that was not theirs to give away.
Right.
So the indigenous response was to, you know, try to resist this construction of the railroad. And right. it was a very legal response because they were trying to uphold the treaties that were already in place.
Right.
So here you have a people who have claim to the Dune Sea, but they're being left out of the equation and their way of life is being damaged in the process. So, you know, connecting it back to Boba, you have this character who understands where the Tuskens are coming from, and his whole, you know, wanting to rule with respect approach comes from his experience with the Tuskens.
Right.
And I think it's so interesting that his past is literally informing his present. It's so cool.
I love it so much. And I love that parallel you just drew for us because, some people are not aware of that. I think there's also a show, I want to say it's called Hell on Wheels, that I think kind of deals with that same sort of situation of just, it was so sad too, like, because now I'm like, grown to really love these Tuskens and stuff. So like when you see them be slaughtered as the train just flies by and the Tuskens weren't doing anything, like they were getting ready to defend themselves, but they didn't do anything. And then the Pikes are just shooting at them because they just assume that they're going to attack and they're not necessarily done anything, you know, just yet. And it's just a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tuskens and the train, they trade shots. The train has taken out so many Tusken. And this seems to be like a regular thing, like you said, Jonah. Like this is something that's been bothering this tribe in particular for a long time. And then Boba just watches as the train speeds away, leaving behind just utter devastation. And then we cut to night, and Boba solemnly helps carry a Tusken to a funeral pyre. And the Tuskens take the body as they heave it into the flames, and Boba stares into the flames. And I just really appreciate this scene because, and again, it kind of, we're peeling back the layers of Boba and the Tuskens. Like, we're getting to know both of them at the same time, and I just really appreciate that.
Yeah. And Boba reacting to that train situation, it also reminded me of when he was younger, and, you know, he lost his father to Mace Windu. So he is having lost his father and he wants to get revenge on Mace Windu.
Right.
And he thinks that's the best course of action, but you can see how much his character has grown because it's not revenge necessarily that he's after for what happened with the Tuskens. It's more avenging.
Yeah.
So he's seeking justice and trying to punish this wrong.
Yeah.
So I like that you have this, you know, young Boba seeking revenge and you have this older Boba who's seeking to avenge.
Yes.
And I just, that was just so beautifully written.
Yeah. It's so good because when he's younger, it's more about himself. Now that he's older, it's really more about like, hey, this affects everyone and I'm going to fix it. I'm going to take care of this. He's going to Batman this situation. So he steps away with a black melon in his hands, and he notices the swoop bike gang that we saw in chapter one speed away in the night. They kind of pass by, and Boba has an idea and heads towards the chieftain, and he communicates with sign language. He has a plan to stop the train, and he promises to be back by the morning, and the chieftain agrees, and we cut to Boba marching through the night towards Tashi Station with a cycler rifle and the wooden gaffy stick. Now, if you're not familiar, Tashi Station, we hear Luke mention that place in the original Star Wars, and actually a cut scene of A New Hope. You can go look this up on YouTube, and I think it's on Disney Plus too, under the extra stuff. We actually see Tashi Station and some of Luke's friends like Biggs Darklighter and Fixer and Cammy. And those are kind of like Luke Skywalker's friends. And inside the station, the Nitko bikers are causing just absolute havoc. And Jonah, you mentioned something that was on one of the bikers' jackets. I think.
Yeah, that's right. So if you pause at when one of the Nictos turns around from having just taken the chips from the table, And you just pause it in that moment. You see that on the back of his jacket, there's a design. I wasn't really sure what the design was, but right under it in Arubesh, it says Tatooine. Oh, and it's just so funny because that's usually stuff that we have in our everyday sort of wardrobe. You know, you have your jacket with like the, you know, logos in the back and whatnot. Right. And here he is with a logo of Tatooine on his back. And I just thought that was so funny.
I love it. I love it. Now, before we go on, do you think that like the symbols that they have, we talked about this in our Discord, actually, like those are like two backward K's in Arabesh. Do you think that this is going to grow into something in the present timeline? Like this gang is going to be a problem later for Boba?
I'd like to think so, because I think a lot of the things that they're seeding in the past, we might see pop up in the future or in the present, I mean. Yeah. But so that biker chick that showed up in the promos, that she had the really cool blue bike. And I think there was also a red bike too. I think they might be related. And there was also a shot, if I remember correctly, of the Nikto riding the bikes that we haven't seen yet, I don't think.
Yep.
So, yeah, they're definitely going to come back. And I'm that's another thing I'm worried about for the Tusken Raiders, because it's like they don't know necessarily that Boba is associated with them, but I'm scared of what might happen repercussions-wise.
Yep, definitely. It gives me like, oh man, I'm really, really worried for these Tuskens feel. So when we get inside the Tashi station, we actually see Fixer and Cammy at the table. Like they are there. Those are Luke Skywalker's old friends and pals. And what's really cool is in the, I don't know if you've read the Last Jedi novelization, but like, it starts off with the dream of Luke imagining like a different life if he never left Tatooine, and he's married to Cammy. So he's married to that girl that we see in this episode in his like dream. In kind of the way that it's written makes it seem like in an alternate kind of reality, that's what happened if he never left.
Oh, wow. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, it's really cool. So like that's her and her current boyfriend, Fixer. And they're both super uncomfortable and annoyed by the gang's presence. And one of the bikers notices some nice Tatooine Lay's potato chips that Fixer has and helps himself to them. And then he takes Fixer's cup and he drinks from it. And Fixer mumbles that this isn't right, but the biker overhears him and whirls around to confront him. And Fixer, encouraged by his former friend Luke Skywalker, gives Cammy one last glance before standing and once again saying that it isn't right. And they push Fixer against the wall and they begin beating him up. And then the door to Tashi Station opens and we see the outline of Boba. And it's so cool. Like it reminded me of Rogue One when you see the outline of Vader in Vader's castle. It's the same type of thing. And he walks in slowly and everyone stops and they begin gathering their weapons and they begin to fight. And he just beats them with his rifle and then the gaffy stick. And I really thought the action here was a little bit better directed in this episode. Like just the way that everything was handled, it felt very violent and like intense and fast. And I faster and more intense, just like George likes it. So it was really good.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would imagine would go down in a bar fight.
Yes.
You know, people flying through windows. But yeah, I thought it was really choreographed well. And one other thing about the bikers is that the subtitles kept calling them patrons.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure.
Maybe they.
Yeah, because patrons normally in. As a librarian, you know, patrons are people who come into the library and those are our patrons.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm
like
curious.
Regulars.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know whether that was the name for the people visiting this establishment or whether that was their names as the bikers.
Not That's sure. interesting. Yeah. That's something to keep maybe in the back of your mind as we, if we see these people again, that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So Boba absolutely clears the entire station, and then he swaggers to the bar and takes a drink, and then he leaves. Now, I do want to pause just in case, because I talked to a lot of my friends who are not as familiar with Star Wars, and they were getting confused on the timeline of everything. So I just now remember this. We might want to talk about in the present timeline. So when we saw the twins and Boba in his armor and stuff, that is taking place directly after season two of The Mandalorian, which is about 5 to 6 years after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
All of this, this flashback with the Tuskens, I'm not sure how long this will go on, but this is not that long after Return of the Jedi. So about 5 years before the present timeline, just so we're all on the same page here.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely had to remind myself.
Yeah.
And I had to help out someone else too, because it was a bit unclear. And it was definitely unclear in The Mandalorian when Ahsoka turns up. And it's like, oh gosh, what's the timeline situation
here? Or Bo-Katan just looking like she did in The Clone Wars.
Yeah, yeah. So,
So it's about five, present timeline, 5 to 6 years after Return of the Jedi. The flashback about right after Return of the Jedi. We're not sure how long it lasts, though. So we start to learn in this flashback what Boba really came to Tashi Station for was not to beat these people up, but to take their swoop bikes. And so, like, he looks for them, and then we cut to the next morning as Boba drives on one of them and with the rest of them hitched behind him, and he arrives at the Tusken camp. And once the Tuskens realize it is Boba, they let him back in with the choppers. That's what the audio description calls them, or I call them swoops, because like swoop bikes in Star Wars. And then Boba steps off the bike and motions towards the bikes to the chieftain. But immediately behind him, the Tuskens begin dismantling the bikes. Like, that's just what they're used to. Like, let's take it apart. And Boba quickly stops them and tells them that he will teach them how to ride, because this is how they're going to stop the train. And I love this next scene, because later Boba steps onto the bike explaining how the controls work. And this is exactly what teaching middle school is like. Like, this scene encapsulates my experience as a middle school teacher almost perfectly. And I love that scene. Like, you can tell, like, Tamara Morrison is having so much fun playing this role. Like, when he's doing, like, a bantha and he's showing them. I just love it.
Yeah, there are moments like that that really remind me of the fact that he never had a normal childhood.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, going through the things that he went through, he had to harden and mature very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I like that now that he's at this older stage in his life, he's experiencing things that allow him to revisit some of those things that he never got a chance to experience.
Right.
And so he's on that bike, and I love that he was like a bantha.
It was so funny.
Like, so funny and so
in his
cute.
Face. Yeah. It's so good. I loved it. And so he's teaching them how to ride the swoop bikes, and the volunteer sits on and immediately goes backwards instead of forwards. And then we cut to a montage of training the Tuskens how to ride. They're not great at first, but eventually they start to catch on, and they're training how to jump onto moving speeders and stuff. And Boba shows the Tusken kid how to reflect the sun off a piece of glass. And I love how he's being accepted into the tribe. Like, you can really tell the tribe accepts Boba, and he is really bonding with all of them. And eventually we cut to a scene where the warrior is training Boba once again in the art of gaffy stick fighting. And it's clear he's getting better at it, but he's still not as good as her. And meanwhile, a Tusken sees the train coming in the distance, and they distribute their cycler rifles, and others are heading towards the speeder bikes, and they take off towards the train. And one by one, shields from the train cars open, and the pikes begin firing at the Tuskens, and the speeders close in on the train and begin firing on the speeders. And you get this cool, really back and forth. And then the Tusken kid runs to position and signals the second group of Tusken snipers, and they provide cover fire as they begin grappling onto the fast moving train. I don't know about you, Jonah, but this whole sequence felt like an homage almost to the sequence we see in Solo when they're trying to get the coaxium on that train.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't think of that. What came to my mind was Lord of the Rings because of that scene where they lit the fires of Minas Tirith and they like managed to communicate it to the other people. Yeah, that's what came to my mind as a, you know, full-on nerd. But
that's awesome.
But yeah, that's definitely something else. And I like that you can tell that this plan was formulated by Boba. So he does have it in him to think strategically when it comes to attacking a situation. So I'm hoping we'll see this skill implemented later on when it's, you know, necessary, especially with the Hutts in play.
Right. Yeah. And it shows too his leadership abilities that he definitely has.
Mm-hmm.
And so the second group of Tusken snipers, they begin providing cover fire as they begin grappling onto the fast moving train. They're right beside it, and the Tuskens are getting taken out. And it feels like every time a Tusken's taken out, like I'm like, oh,
I was keeping count and I was like, no, we've lost four.
I know. Yeah. And I've never thought that before. Like even like good guys in Star Wars, like that you don't really know. Like I've never really been connected to them in the way that I am with this tribe of Tuskens, you know? So like it hurts every time that happens. And Boba's speeder ends up getting shot, and you can see it's kind of on fire a little bit. And a raider is about to fall off when Boba manages to catch them. And then together they swing towards the train as his speeder is destroyed. And they climb on top of the train, and the Tuskens and Boba are on top. And some of the pikes start to get out on top to fight them, but they make quick work of them, and more pikes come. And they use the hatch door to protect themselves like Solo. They're kind of shooting back and forth. But behind the hatch doors, and then our warrior queen comes alongside the speeder,
in it her body. It's
just amazing. As she's coming alongside and jumping onto the train, my new favorite train conductor droid sees the situation. I love this droid. And like, I mean, this droid has initiative. Like he just looks out. He's like, this is not good. I know what I need to do. And he just accelerates the train as the warrior queen struggles to hold on. And she climbs inside instead of going to the top and just absolutely dominates everyone inside.
I love how, she just decimated and owned everyone in that train. And I love how she just pulled them down into the train with her. And it was just so, so cool. And I want to know more about her. Like, I want to know their names. And that's another interesting thing. We don't know their names, but we still feel an attachment to them.
Yes.
And I just think that's really powerful storytelling there. Like, we don't know who they are, you know, specifically, but we care.
I care for every single one of those people.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So she is just making her way through there. And then, She clears the way for the group to move forward, and the train conductor droid fires the train up to full power, and one of the Tuskens is thrown off, and then a pike pops up from a hatch and battles Boba with the warrior queen's help. He moves the pike above him, and then the pike is thrown off like the Tusken before, and Boba eventually makes his way inside the control room, but the train conductor jumps out of the train and then just crawls out like he's done. He's going to live to fight another day.
So much for going down with the ship.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so Boba spots the Johnson bar and tries to stop it, but he can't. So he uses his gaffy stick to stop it. That eventually does the trick. And that whole thing was just a really cool sequence. I just really enjoyed the whole time. I was leaning forward in my seat just watching this scene, and I just really loved it.
And what something just came to my mind is the fact that I thought they were going to destroy the train, like just get rid of it. But in a way, it was like them hunting. When they hunt, they use every piece of the carcass for whatever purposes they have. So they did the same thing with this train. They stopped it, and now they're going to take what they need from it instead of just completely obliterating it.
That's really
and I
cool.
just thought that was really smart and very similar to how they hunt on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, they are looking through it, get what they need, and not just wasting and destroying it. That's really, really cool. And so the Tuskens, that's what they're doing. They're looking through the contents of the train as the Pikes are kneeling before Boba, and he asks who the leader is, and one eventually rises, and Boba sits there, and he drinks from his black melon as the Pike removes his mask to reveal a very different-looking Pike than what we're used to, but he still looks like a catfish, like all Pikes do. Just a little more narrow, not as like a small face on a really big head. But I really like the redesign here. I think they look cool.
You know, to be honest, I don't even remember where we saw what they look like before. I thought it was just the masks that they were wearing in the Clone Wars and that very cool voice that they had. And I was surprised when I saw their actual face, and I thought, wow, okay, I can guess why they wear their masks, so they can seem more intimidating.
Yeah, they don't look as scary as like their mask makes them.
Yeah, they actually look kind of cute. Like, I want to boop their nose.
Boop. Yeah, you can't really take a crime syndicate seriously if you're wanting to boop their nose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the mask really well designed on their part. So the Pike ask if they're going to be killed, but Boba wants to know if they're carrying spice, and the Pike leader plays dumb, and so Boba clarifies for him. Santa Spice from the slave mines of Kessel. So remember the Kessel run mentioned in A New Hope, that's what Solo did, and then in the movie Solo, we actually got to see that, and that's where we saw the last live-action Pike as well. Mm. And the Pike acts like he doesn't know what it looks like. And then at that moment, one of the Tusken drops one of the crates and the spice just glitters out. I love that. Perfect timing by that Tusken. And Boba's like, yeah, that's what it looks like. The Pike is confused because he thought that they were essentially like mindless raiders. Like, He's not understanding what's happening. And then Boba stands and announces, these sands are no longer free for you to pass. These people lay ancestral claim to the Dune Sea. And if you are to pass, a toll is to be paid to them. And any death dealt from the passing freighters will be returned tenfold. Now that's the Boba Fett that I like.
Yeah, right, yeah. I do wish that the Tusken chieftain was with him when saying that stuff, like him participating and Boba also translating and adding along the way. But I do like that the Tusken chieftain approved and nodded in response to that. So yeah, I really love the authority that Boba had in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, now I can see like he is in control right here. And like, it's for like a really good reason too. And so that kind of leads me to what I was referring to earlier. I guess my question is this. Are we starting to uncover what some of Boba's motivation is in the present timeline? I think there's two possibilities here. Number one, and I hate to say this, but something bad happens to these Tuskens. That's a possibility. And because something bad happens to these Tuskens, he's going to go and get vengeance on their behalf.
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case. I hope number two is actually the case. I was thinking about this morning, and I thought about this all day. What if Boba is taking control of Tatooine in an attempt to reconnect the Tuskens and like almost regraft them into Tatooine society?
Oh, I actually really love that more.
I do too.
Because it doesn't make me want to cry.
Right. So it's almost in the sense like he's clearing the way. It's almost like he's an operative on the inside, bringing the system down for them.
Right, being the voice that they need.
Yeah,
yeah. In essence, I love that idea. Then again, Star Wars does like tearing our hearts out.
They do.
So I don't want to see that because it's you know, we've drawn these parallels with native tribes. And I just, like, I don't want to see that on screen.
Right.
But it does have the potential to go there. Especially with the Pikes doing some retaliation, if that were to happen down the line, because, you know, in the Bad Batch, when Roland Durand messed up with the Pikes, they ended up taking one of his horns, and that was just, you know, the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And so I just, like, I'm worried what this might bring in terms of repercussions for the Tusken Raiders.
For sure. Yeah, I'm worried too. Maybe there's a scenario three where it's a little bit of both. Maybe the whole tribe's not wiped out, but there's something significant happens to them. And then I could see a scenario where, to really cement his rule or to win the day at the end of the day, he's going to have to use help from this Tusken tribe in the present day.
Yeah, yeah.
I think something like that is definitely going to happen. One of those three things, I think, is going to happen.
Because when we see him in The Mandalorian, he's definitely after his armor.
Right.
And, you know, in this episode, we see him embrace this new path that he's on, this new tribe that he's in. And it's like, well, what motivates him to go from that to then wanting to get his armor?
Right.
And then wanting to be a crime lord. So something definitely escalates for him to go back on that, wanting to wear his armor and then wanting to be a crime lord to do something.
Right. Right. Yeah. Again, we don't know really what Boba's motivations are in the present timeline, but I feel like we're getting closer and, like, we got a lot of clues in this episode about what it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited for next week. I can't wait. So Boba says to the Pike leader that they will give them their lives and that they are to walk in single file towards the sun, and it's going to lead them to Anchorhead, and they will receive black melons to survive. And then one of the raiders knocks something off the train, and then water gushes out, and they all celebrate and as it rushes down over them. And then we cut tonight inside a Tusken hut, and Boba sits across from the chieftain. And I love this scene. This scene is so cool for several reasons. And then the chieftain says, there are many different Tusken tribes, and since the ocean's dried, which is really cool, we have stayed hidden. Other tribes have survived by killing. So you do get the sense that this tribe is unique in the sense of, like, they're not acting like other Tuskens on Tatooine are. They're not trying to go out there and just kill for fun. Like, you get the sense that the offworlders, that's the story they tell of Tuskens, right?
Or, like, the Tuskens who took Shmi in Attack of the Clones.
Right.
Like, they all have different motivations and shouldn't be painted with the same brush.
Exactly. Also cool that Tatooine once had oceans. And we see that kind of later in the vision that Boba has a little bit, unless that's Kamino.
It's a bit of both, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So Boba thinks that they should not have to hide. The chieftain says that the off-worlders have machines, but Boba points out that they do too now. And the chieftain then says that he has a gift for Boba because he's an awesome guide. And then he offers him a small wicker cage. And Boba opens it to see a tiny lizard and is supposed to guide him. And then the chieftain flicks a mist into Boba's face, and then the lizard crawls up Boba's nose.
Totally unexpected, because I thought...
What is happening here?
Yeah, I thought it was going to go in the direction of, oh man, Boba is going to be a Disney princess right now, and he's going to have his own little pet. Sort of like Rapunzel and Pascal.
Oh, so you thought it'd, like, sit on his shoulder or something? Okay.
That's what I thought it was going in, and that it was going to guide him. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is so weird and so cool. But then it went really weird.
It went really weird. Yeah. For a moment there, I was slightly like, oh, please don't do this. I thought that the lizard, I thought it would be revealed that the lizard has been controlling Boba since this moment. I was like, please don't let that happen. Like, you know, like the Men in Black thing. Like, this lizard's actually just in control now. But that's not what's happening. So the lizard goes up his nose. Boba's like, I think I accidentally ate this. I'm so sorry. This is supposed to be a nice gift.
I really love how it's a profound moment, and yet they managed to fit this very humorous line. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, I think I swallowed it.
Yes.
It's like, so I swallowed good. Your gift. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I love it because he's like, he's still out of his element with them for now. Like, he is not like totally used to their culture either. Yeah. He doesn't know everything. And so he finds himself after that, like, he starts kind of, everything is blurring around him. And at this point, Boba's just tripping. Like, he is just straight up tripping. The chieftain says the lizard will guide him. And he's like, okay, whatever. And he finds himself wandering in the desert alone, and the world is blurring. And we see he's in his armor, and then he's not. Like, it's flashing back and forth. And he sees two dead trees in the middle of an ocean. And again, that could be like Tatooine's ocean, or Kamino, where he grew up, and he makes his way towards it. And red eyes glow from the twisty branches as it starts to wrap around Boba. Another thing that this reminded me of, I don't know about you, Jonah Marie, but it kind of reminded me of Black Panther a little bit. Like, oh, when Black Panther goes into that ancestral plane.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
It reminded me of that a little bit, I guess, with the red eyes and the trees a little bit, like the panthers that are in the
mm-hmm,
tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not even, that didn't come to mind, but I can totally see it.
Yeah.
And to me, this scene, it was like Boba's version of the cave on Dagobah. And yes. it's like what Luke asks, yes, Yoda about what's in the cave, and Yoda tells him it's only what you take with you. Mm. And so whatever emotional or mental burdens Boba took with him in this, you know, moment, it's what he ended up seeing.
Wow.
And I just thought that was really cool because, you know, the Force is everywhere. It binds us and whatnot, and so it's just really interesting to see that sort of little hint of a Force element, yep, playing there.
I think that's why I really love this too, is because, like, normally we see only these type of things with Jedi or Sith. It's really cool to see just a person like Boba experiencing something like this, because that's what makes Star Wars special, right? Like, the Force, you can't ignore that in Star Wars. And so, like, to bring it in this unique way, I think, yeah, is really cool. And I think you're spot on with that.
And with the, like, the Dathomirian witches, for example, like, they experiment and use the Force in a very different way than what the Jedi do.
Yes.
So it's just, like, it's an interesting thing to think about how in the Tusken Raiders, like, this particular tribe, they might interact with the Force in a way that, you know, they don't realize that it is the Force.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was just like, this is such a great moment, because, yeah, it's so often that we see it playing out through a Jedi and through a Force-sensitive, yep, character. So it's great to see an everyday man, a simple man making his way through the universe,
right,
experiencing this. And
it's so cool.
Yeah. And the red-eyed creatures, too, in the tree. I know the concept art at the very end in the credits showed Jawas. And that's, you know, I guess that's what they were alluding to in this scene. But they also reminded me of the episode Destiny in Star Wars The Clone Wars, when Yoda faces a shadow version of himself. The shadow version has red eyes.
Nice.
And it was a manifestation of Yoda's dark side. So, yeah, in watching the scene, I was initially thinking that the red eyes in the tree were like Boba's insecurities, maybe some of his vices, things that have the potential to overpower him if he lets it. But he keeps it at bay because this is who he is. And I really love that sort of symbolism that you can try to, you know, extract from there.
That is so good. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. So there is a lot of symbolism in the scene as the branches wrap around him, kind of like almost suffocating him. And and you start to see he flashes into the Sarlacc, like the branches become the Sarlacc, and then he's in and out. And then he remembers being in the Geonosis arena where his father, Jango, died. And then we see a really cool new scene of young Boba on Kamino race across his room that we saw in Attack of Clones as Jango leaves, and he's watching his dad leave. And he puts his hand in the window as his father leaves, and then suddenly he's back in a tree as the limbs close in around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, and
yeah.
Because it brought me back to a moment very early on in the Bad Batch when Omega is watching the Havoc Marauder leave. Mm. And, you know, it's raining, it's pouring, just like how it is in this vision that he's having. And he's watching his father leave, sort of like how she's watching that Bad Batch leave.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're both, I don't know whether their timeline together aligns necessarily on Kamino, but right. They're both there. And unfortunately, they're there by themselves. And it's so sad right. because they have the potential to come together. And they're right. also twins.
Right.
So I'm so excited about Star Wars right now. It gets me so giddy and excited.
Yes, it's so good. Like, there's so much potential
yeah.
with all this. And so yeah. in the vision, he puts his hand on the window as his father leaves Kamino. And then suddenly he's back in the tree and the limbs are closing around him. He breaks one of them and then the screen turns white. And then we're back in the flashback, back in the Tusken camp. The Massive sees something coming towards them, and the kid sees that it's Boba, and he's clutching the broken tree branch. And the Tusken jumps around Boba as he enters exhausted. And I love that. Like, the kid is so excited that he's yeah. back. And then the chief and the warrior queen greet Boba. And then the chief then opens up the wicker basket, and the lizard leaves Boba. And jumps back in, which is really interesting. And Boba is like, I thought that was part of the vision. I didn't realize that was still in me. I love that. And then Boba yeah. presents the tree limb to the chieftain. And then he's to accompany the warrior. And he enters a tent where he later stands bare-chested as the Tuskens ceremonially dress him in black robes that we see him in when we first meet him back in The Mandalorian. And it's just really cool to see them do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I love most about this scene of Boba coming back with that branch is that it reminded me of, you know, in much like how a force sensitive kid would go into a cave somewhere yeah. and find their kyber crystal.
Oh yeah.
And today is actually January 5th, the day that Path of the Jedi premiered.
Nice.
Which is a Star Wars Rebels episode where Ezra gets his kyber crystal in the Lothal Jedi Temple, and he's had yeah. this crazy visions. And as also the day that this episode premiered. So you have these two episodes that just revolve around, you know, the theme of self-discovery and, yeah. and finding new paths.
I love that comparison, because that's exactly what I thought of. I didn't think of it in that way of like the stick is kind of like the kyber crystal.
Yeah.
But that's such a good point, because like when he goes to craft the gaffy stick, once he exits in his robes and stuff, and then the Tusken kid is so excited to lead him across the sand dunes. And then you see kind of like this area, this workshop, and our Tusken queen hands him the tree branch that he got. And he's going to make his own gaffy stick. I love this scene too, because Boba experiences Galaxy's Edge. Yeah. Like, he's building his own lightsaber, yeah. you know, like that's basically what this is. He's crafting his own gaffy stick. And when he's finished, he presents it to our queen, who nods in approval. And then we fade into night where the Tuskens sit around a bonfire, and then he presents the gaffy stick to all of them. And our queen and Boba begin a ceremonial dance around the bonfire, and as they stomp and circle around the fire, others begin joining in, all in unison. And then finally the chieftain joins, and he's been accepted by them. This is his new tribe. And then we cut to black. End of episode.
Yeah. I love the audio description, the way it says the chieftain proudly watches the new member of his tribe. Ooh. And I thought, That's so, so beautiful. Good. It's so beautiful. And I just, I love the Maori influence, yes, in this particular sequence and how it's very reminiscent of their martial arts. And it's just, I can imagine the kind of input that Te Muera put into this the making of this scene. And I just, yeah, I can't wait for like the behind the scenes,
oh, it's gonna be
stuff
so good.
Later on.
Well, because like I love it about Te Muera is that he's so infectious with his joy and his enthusiasm about talking about this role and like his impact on the role too. And it's just so fun to see someone having fun. Like, it's just so fun to see that. And
it's
so
infectious. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And so that's the end of the episode. My final thoughts on this episode, I thought it was just incredible. Like I said before, I wish if they hadn't like crafted the first episode and this one together, maybe at least show both of them on the same day or something, because I am 100% behind this show now, like going forward. I would say last week was about a 7 out of 10 for me. This one was like 9.5 out of 10. I just absolutely loved it. I loved all the surprises and the Easter eggs in this episode. And like we said, like I feel like I'm starting to get an idea of maybe what Boba's motivation was. And so I just really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I can't wait for them to solidify it. Although I'm, you know, of course, hesitant at the same time. Yeah. But yeah, this was a fantastic episode. And I was just smiling from ear to ear after it was done. And I know some people were crying and tearing up because of what it meant to them to see that sort of that indigenous representation in there. And it's just, it was beautifully done.
It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. So we want to hear your thoughts and theories. And that's one of the fun things about this show is that we do a voicemail hotline episode where you guys call in and you give us your thoughts. So you can call into our voicemail hotline, which is 205-259-6675. And that number will be in the show notes in case you didn't catch it. You can just call that number, leave the voicemail, keep it under 3 minutes. And if you mess up, don't worry about it. Call again. We'll use that one. We won't embarrass you or anything. That's part of the fun. So call in and we'll do another one of those voicemail episodes. Jonah, thank you so much for filling in for Mac. You are just incredible. You have such a great and unique insight into the world of Star Wars that I think I can speak on behalf of our audience. Like, thank you for your perspective on Star Wars, because it's just incredible.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I honestly just watch things for the fun of it. And sometimes I have like that magnifying glass where I'm like, oh, this is really cool. But I'm glad. Thanks for offering me a spot here to talk about it, because it was just that brilliant of an episode that I just needed to get it out of my system.
Anytime. Yeah, there was a lot to talk about this episode. So. Jonah, where else can people find you or listen to you if they want more great insight from you?
Well, listeners can find me on Twitter with the handle @BlueJayGuys, and they can also listen to me and my mom talk about the Star Wars animated shows on the Geeky Bubble podcast. Right now we're on hiatus, but we will be back for the second season of The Bad Batch.
Oh,
so I'm excited.
I can't wait. And I will be listening to every episode. So good. Well, thank you again, Jonah. And thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to call in the voicemail hotline. And as always, keep the watch.